Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to once again another edition of the SPT podcast. In today's episode, we actually have another brief discussion, unfortunately, about another whereabouts failure that's been announced, of course, Mr. Christian Coleman, which we mentioned last week as a kind of bystander in the whole discussion about NASA. But again, it's back in the news. We also then go on to discuss lateral acceleration or non-sagittal acceleration. So basically, acceleration requirements for some team sports that are going sideways. Our preferences on what to use for those methods, really, and the health benefits of certain scenarios. Okay, hope you enjoy.
Welcome to the Sports Performance Training Podcast with Stu and Aid.
And welcome back to another edition of the SPT Podcast with myself, Stuart Marshall, and my good colleague,
Aidan Toomey.
Yeah, introduce yourself. Yeah, we did it almost exactly right, but that's good. So on this week, we got together. We're a little bit behind schedule with a few things. However, today we are going to be discussing what we kind of classify as NSA, and that is non-sagittal acceleration. So acceleration is just basically, sagittal acceleration is what you traditionally see of just going forward. I'm facing this direction. I'm going typical to what you would see on a running track and athletes coming out of blocks. So today we're actually going to talk about methods of acceleration that include either a lateral kind of movement first, a little bit of transverse rotation, and little things like that. Yeah, so we're going to go through that. Obviously, Aidan's going to be here for our health and therapy part of that. So obviously, there's a bit of things you need to be aware of when it comes into those kind of accelerations. And we'll go on to that in the discussion. Is that good with you, Aid?
Yeah, I'm happy with that. But before we start on this, Stu, we all just have a laugh at Christian Coleman? After our podcast last week about NASA, we don't need to talk about Christian because it's literally the exact same thing. It's like,
we timed that podcast completely wrong and right, if that makes sense. Because obviously, people have been searching that whole situation now. So thankfully, our podcast has been a little bit highlighted and we've got a few extra plays because of that. And you know what? Brilliant, because the whereabouts system is absolutely crazy, right? But then soon as that happened, as soon as we released it, I think like a day after, Monday, Tuesday, whatever it was, the news broke about Christian Coleman missing what is effectively a fourth test, but a third test within the 12-month period. So if anyone listened to last week's podcast, you'll be aware of that he was, let's be honest right now, played the rules and got let off, completely let off by the stroke of luck. And but he's managed to miss a fourth one or a third one within another 12-month period. So the first one dropped off, and then he's done it again. He's made a really ridiculous excuse, and then saying that the drugs tester didn't call him. Well, of course I'm not going to call you. My days. I can't even explain it, honestly. It's like, and then again. The same scenario with NASA about the athlete attitude.
Yeah, exactly.
His response to it has been completely, completely just does not care.
My problem for this, Stu, is, and I don't want to get into it too much, but for the face of athletics right now, if he gets banned, athletics is going to look bad. If he doesn't get banned, athletics is going to look bad. No matter what the result is, athletics as a sport is going to look bad. And that not just because of what's happened, but purely because the athletes that have most recently messed up on the simplest thing.
Yeah, it's two world champions.
Attitudes.
Yeah, and attitudes. Really, and the thing is with it as well, a little bit, is, again, I don't want to go into it. Not going to have another discussion about the whole scenario, but we're not saying that he's a drugs cheat. That's not the end of the world. That's not what's happening at all. It's just the fact that you have one process that you have to adhere to be a full-time athlete. Right? We said it last week, and I say it again. I'm sorry. Oh, I don't want to swear or anything like that, but you have one job. You know, you can say, oh, my job is to run fast. My job is to do this. You can cry as much as you want. You've got one thing to do for 1 hour a day, Suck it up, you goddamn buttercup, because there's absolutely no excuse. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And what I love, actually, what I do absolutely love, is that there's been loads of social media with loads of athletes who are just kicking off going, come on now, pull yourself together. It's not rocket science, you know? We've got British athletes who have really kicked in. One who has been on maternity leave for the past 9 months, who's gone, I still had to do this while I'm on maternity leave. You know, I've got a baby. You know, the whole scenario. Absolutely right. Well done. Yeah. And then, thankfully, we've got people like Di Green who have really kicked it off. And it's just right. Set it out straight. You know,
amazing.
I really like how a lot of athletes have stood up and gone, you know what? This isn't new. We do it day in, day out. You know, and no offense, if you are the world champion, you have Nike as your main sponsor. I'm pretty sure you've got a bit of cash, right?
Yeah.
You've got the people around you who can help organize your time and what you're responsible to do. And if you haven't, guess what? It's time to make sure you get it, because you're going to just ruin your own career. Because who's going to want to invite him anywhere? What's the point?
Yeah, exactly. And the big thing is, Stu, if you had an employee, or you owned a company, and you kept turning up late to work for the appraisals, or you're missing meetings,
you're sacked. You're sacked.
Simple sacked. As that.
Yeah, you know what? It's like, tell you what, every Monday morning, 9:30, we're going to have the weekly team meeting. Okay, that's it. You turn up at 10:30. Oh no! Oh, is it 9:30? And the question is not even like it's new. It's like, oh, was it today? Oh, I wasn't aware. Yeah, you was aware. It's the same day every Monday. You know, it's that kind of. It's just ridiculous. Any normal scenario, you're gone.
Like the amount of times now, if a lot of you in the podcast, me and Stu actually used to work together in an office on floors.
Yeah.
But Stu. Even my team had meetings on Monday morning, 9 a.m, right? We were all there. Team leader would turn up and go, actually, nothing's changed. It's the same system. And we carry on with our job. Or he says the meeting's been cancelled. But we're all there.
Exactly,
that's basically the same thing. He has to be there at that time. And if the drug testers don't come, they don't come. If they do come, at least you can do it.
I just find it's just absolutely crazy. It makes the sport look stupid. And again, you're right. Athletics can't win, but athletics can only win from this by saying, you know what, you are banned for a set period, because these are the rules. No matter what you try and fluff around saying, oh, I'd gone to a shop, or you should have called me. No, they shouldn't have called you. It doesn't matter if you've gone to a shop. You set a time and said you will be at your house. Just be at your damn house, right? I'm sorry, but if WADA do not ban him for at least the minimum period, then what's the point in doing the whereabouts system? What is the point in doing the whereabouts system? Because it's just people just flounce it and don't care when they have flounced it. We have rules in the sport. The rules of the sport are there for a reason. And it's, you know, we're the only sport that kind of maintained it to a really high level of that integrity level. You know, we know for a fact that there's a lot of team sports out there that aren't quite as strict, but it's track and field. Come on. Oh, it frustrates me. Anyway, I don't want to go into it too much, because we'll have another half hour discussion on this.
Totally. But my thing is, if he doesn't get banned, Stu, all the race promoters, all the Diamond Leagues, they invite people to those races. Don't they invite them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
just boycott him. If WADA don't do it, the race organizers can, because he is not someone who is going to bring the crowd, because everyone's getting annoyed with what's going on.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, all hail Noah Lyles, that's all I say. Anyway, as we were saying,
acceleration.
Yeah, what are we at? 7.5 minutes in already. Okay, sorry guys. we will get back on track. I promise. But unfortunately, you know, this is what the point of the podcast is, right? Topical, current situations. You know, we're probably going to talk at some point about everyone getting back onto track. But at the moment, we're going to talk about we say we're sports. Let's look at sports. I'm bringing this up into conversation because, and very recently, actually. I got involved with a local pro basketball team and just to kind of work on their athleticism and their acceleration capacities. And I guess, you know, we talk about acceleration, or there is a lot of talk about team sport acceleration currently going around everywhere around social media. An awful lot of podcasts discuss it, and, you know, and rightfully so. And there's that whole scenario of, and this is the reason why the basketball team got in touch with myself, for instance, is know the rules before you break the rules, right? So And that's very, very true, isn't it? You know, you want to learn something and then go, actually, do I need that or not need it? Or can I adapt it to my scenario a little bit? And I think there's people who have been quite prevalent in the world at the moment who are saying that kind of thing. I will shout out to Stu McMillan, who shouts that quite a lot, actually, about acceleration capacity. You know, learn the kind of fundamental pattern, shapes, rhythm, the whole lot, and then adapt it to what your actual sport requirements are. You learn the basics and then work out where you are. And that's, we can see an awful lot about team sports getting involved more with kind of track coaches to learn those elements and then shift it to what they actually require. And that's what we're doing. So, and that's where this bit comes into regards to non-sagittal. A lot of acceleration work for team sports isn't going to be straightforward. They're not going to be facing the same direction. They're not going to be coming out of starting blocks. Well, they're definitely not coming out of starting blocks. and there's those little bits there, really.
Wouldn't that be great to see on a cricket pitch?
if you're not the facing batter, right? When, you know, I don't know what the other end's called, but let's just call it the other stump end. But yeah, he's like, mind you, with pads on, that would just look horrific. You just hit the deck in about two steps, right? But so as we go into the whole thing about this, there's obviously with acceleration, we do want to see some very, you know, quite straightforward key elements to it. You know, a good extension through the hips, the knee, the ankle, or optimum extension of the ankle, not full extension of the ankle. You know, the torso angle, shin angles, these are all things that, regardless of what sport you're doing, they're a key concept of what you need to kind of get into. We can teach athletes generically forward acceleration. That's not the end of the world. That is almost the same no matter what sport you do. But then there comes an element of lateral acceleration, right? Now, lateral acceleration, so we're going to go sideways. So if I'm facing straight, I'm going to go to my left or to my right. Now, there's two ways we can think about that. Well, there's a few ways, but basically I'm either already moving, as in I'm kind of doing a side skip, or like you would do if you're tracking the game or tracking a player. You know, you see this quite a lot of times when, let's say, you're on the right side of the football pitch and the game's on the left side of the football pitch and they're going down the wing and you're just tracking back slightly, just skipping along, facing the game, so you're ready to move if you need to move, okay? We're all fairly familiar with that kind of position. There's also, you mentioned cricket there, actually.
Yeah.
So cricket is a side-on start because I'm trying to keep my bat within the crease, so I'm not going to get run out, but I'm wanting to go in the other direction, right? So my left and right are facing this way, but I want to go completely to the other way. So that side position. And then, of course, we have that element of where something like this baseball, same kind of scenario, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly.
And these are all elements that we need to kind of consider. And then there's also little bits of what you need to do. So, for instance, I talked about the side skip, again, about tracking the game. So then comes a little bit about disassociation of the trunk and the lower legs, really, of how I can still keep moving in one direction, but I need to be looking at the other direction.
Yeah.
So I still need to watch the player on the right, but I need to get to the left as quick as I possibly can. So we're just going to have a little bit of a discussion about some little key concepts about that. But I'm going to kick off first with what's called the drop step or the false step.
The false step, as some call it.
The false step. Now, the false step is, now, I love this because obviously we see it an awful lot of time in like 800 meter running.
People all the time.
Yeah, people hit the line and all of a sudden they take what looks like to be a step back with one foot whilst lifting the other leg, right? Now then, I love this because it's actually one of my favorite things to do, and for team sports especially, right? So there's a nice little research actually that was done back in 2014 by Kusik et al. And basically they measured, right, starting positions from out of blocks, obviously, a false step or a forward step, right? And believe it or not, apart from the blocks, obviously you've got a power position, it was actually the false step which actually made them run faster. Yeah. Anyway. To 2.5 meters, there was about a 10th difference. So 2.5 meters, you're already a 10th ahead. That's crazy, right? And at 5 meters, that expanded out just almost about a 10.5 by doing a false step. Now, the reason for that, obviously, is if you imagine coming out of blocks, right, your body has to extend out of the blocks and you get into that lovely optimal extension position.
Yeah.
By doing a false step, you're actually almost putting yourself already in that position.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you kind of jump and split your leg slightly so that you're almost going to like, your leg isn't fully extended when it hits the floor. It's almost like a quarter squat. So you've got a little bit of projection of the hips. And then you can start the movement as if you were coming out of the blocks for your first and second steps. And that's the whole point. Now, this is what I teach with a few of my guys for the team sports, is when they're going laterally, going sideways, same kind of scenario, right? So there's two ways a lot of people will kind of coach is. One is they will say, let's say I'm going to move to my left. I will, some people will coach, I still do coach it because you need to teach both ways. Shift your weight over to on the left leg, and then we do what's called like a cariocha, right? A step over. And what we're going to do is we're going to bring the right leg round, and we're going to step over, and we're going to do a kind of, a step over movement as we're going sideways. Now, that movement is good when I still need to watch going forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm tracking the player. I need to get a bit more speed. A little side skip is no longer good enough, so I need to get a bit more pace. And in that scenario, realistically, I'm better to get a little bit of momentum going with a side step. Now, the problem I see a little bit with the side step is, now this is what I want to discuss with yourself, is to do that, my plant leg, so in this case, my left leg, is going to be, sorry, my right leg is rotating round my left leg. My hip is rotating, which is increasing the internal rotation of my stance leg, right?
Yeah.
Yes, so obviously the femur is turning. And obviously there's issues of restrictions, right?
Of course.
And so now, that's one thing to just discuss with yourself, really. Obviously, when we're doing a cariocha sidestep, is that issue?
Yeah, well, especially when you... So for me, working with different sports, like when I was first getting into different sports, dealing with footballers and dealing with rugby players were the first two differences. What I found was the rugby players can comfortably do the step over direction, because most of the time, and the way they play their sport, their feet are quite in a neutral, slightly outturned position.
Yeah,
where a lot of the footballers are on a lot more externally rotated position, even when they're standing still, when they're moving, when they're kicking the ball, because the way the ball.
Yeah, they're kicking the ball with the instep, right?
Yeah, exactly. So then when I found that speed coaches that were helping them develop acceleration speeds, and they're trying to teach them this step over when they start getting them to work with change direction, all of a sudden, they were getting pinching in their groin, they were getting adductor issues, they were getting hamstring issues on the outside, you know, the outside of their calf started hurting because they can't internally rotate that leg. So it's coming down even harder on that little toe. So the outside of their calf was getting a lot of pain because it was taking a lot of stress and a lot of force because they physically couldn't internally rotate that femur.
Yeah.
And the pelvis on the standing leg, the pelvis couldn't rotate round it. Yeah, so it couldn't even set up that position properly.
And now, that's a key thing, isn't it, really?
But that was a common thing I saw.
Mm.
Yeah. Where with the rugby players, what I was watching them, they were able to do the step over really easily. They were actually able to perform it as a plyometric, which was really impressive to see that they were physically able to do that.
Yeah.
I watched one footballer attempt to do it because he was part of the same camp. As soon as he did it, I wanted to cry. And you know what? He did cry because he got hurt trying to do it.
And you know what? That's the thing as coaches that you need to be aware of, again, is it's what sport are they? You know, there are going to be certain limitations. You know, those who have a foot dominant sport such as football, or probably only going to be football to some degree, they do have a predominance to have externally rotated legs because they are going to be kicking a ball with their legs. They're so used to that kind of position and being ready for it. So when you get them to do a lateral acceleration with a crossover, a step over even.
Yeah, exactly.
There are going to be massive limitations to that hip position. And you're right, impingement, adductor, you know, there's going to be some degree tight glutes and TFL and everything else. And that whole scenario is going to be there. So you as a coach have to be aware of what sport am I coaching?
Definitely.
And then, so that's going to be limit your kind of the physicality of the person, but they will need to be able to do that at some point.
Yeah. Like one is look at the sport they're playing. And then two is actually, can the athlete that I'm asking, can he perform this movement?
Mm.
So that's, you know, and I find it fascinating when I watch football, and my favorite footballer of all time is Ronaldinho. And he can internally rotate and externally rotate his hips really well. But that's partly because he did indoor five-a-side football. So he had to use the inside and the outside of his foot constantly.
Yeah.
And he hit a lot of the balls on the outside of the boot instead of the inside of the boot. But then you flip it and go look at someone like David Beckham, who used the inside of his foot to an extreme point to curl the ball. Yeah. He can't step over his leg like that at all. He can't do it.
Yeah. And you as a coach, in theory, you know, you need to, we talk about this, I talk about this all the time, and we talk about it, you have to make your individual athletic, okay? Mm. They have to be athletic, and that includes, and healthy. So you have to give them, you could internal, external rotation of the hip, make sure that everything's working fine. You know, we're doing linear running, we're doing curvilinear running, we're going to do Karrueche kind of stuff with the high step overs, because at some point, they're going to need that kind of space in their body and knowledge of how to move through that range of motion. Because if they don't, when the moment comes, they're going to get injured because they're not used to it. And we see, I see it quite a bit now with the footballers that I get, is that they just, yeah, you're right, they can't step over. They can't get the leg A high enough to create space. They can't bring like over enough in order to close that gap. And because there's just not enough internal rotation. And there's other restrictions that are around the joint capsules and stuff. And the problem that I've got then is that when they start doing an agility drill, because I went down to the academy and watched a few people do the agility testing, but there's no real coaching of how they're changing direction as such. But then when you're predisposed to some degree to want to do a step over.
Yeah.
Depending, you know, most people, sometimes they'll change direction or they'll use their inside leg to plant and then they'll step over with their outside leg to get in the same direction, eventually a crossover. But they haven't got the internal rotation. They haven't got the body awareness what to do. So it becomes slow. It's a slow movement because they can't go through it in optimal speed. So, or range of motion. So it becomes a bit part. So they can't go through. They've got to do a second step to turn and turn and turn and turn and turn. And before you know it, they've lost half a second on the test, or not half a second, but they've lost tenths of a second on that test, on the one turn, never mind the second and the third and the fourth turn.
And what's interesting, Stu, is that step over movement became big now that more and more people in the UK are watching NFL and watching the combine. Now, the reason why they do that step over on the first movement is because because it's a laser starter. So their hand is on the laser. Yeah. And they want to leave their hand behind for as long as possible. So they're moving the leg around them while the hand stays there so they can start moving. So they're already ahead of the timer.
Yeah.
Right.
They
do certain change directions for certain plays. So they learn that all the way through. And people started seeing people like Saquon Barkley, Odell Beckham use it. And people in football and rugby started bringing it in. And actually, in rugby, I saw more hip injuries. And when I've watched videos, they're all trying to do this step over to change direction. Yeah.
And do you know what?
Can you physically? No, don't do
and
it.
And the thing is,
in a lot of footballers as well.
Yeah, they have to be able to do. There's no, absolutely, I don't. So when we go into what I tend to favor towards, you have to be able to have an inside step. An inside stance leg crossover, step over. You have to be able to do that no matter what. Because you're right, if you're changing direction, you're not always going to be on the right optimal foot, which for me is the outside foot to change direction. And you want to be able to shift your weight over that joint, step over and change direction. However, so this is the bit, and we'll get into it more so on the next step. But I'm going to revert back slightly a little bit, right? So when at the start of this podcast, I mentioned about the fact of, what did I say? Oh, yeah, I was right. Know the rules before you break the rules, right? Mm-hmm. And we talked about optimal extension, right? When you look at your athlete or your sports person, now, obviously, they're going to go from a lateral acceleration. So stand behind them. So stand behind them 10 meters or so, right? Just ask them to do two steps laterally, right? Now, they should be able to get, if you were to almost just get a silhouette of their view, right, you should almost see the exact same position of someone leaving the box. So what I mean by that is they'll have a forward lean of the body. In this case, it'll be like a left lean of the body. And if they're going to step over, they should be able to step enough round with their hip that actually I can see I can see a gap between their shank part of the leg, so that's the calf, the lower leg, and what is now their stance leg. So they should be able to get enough round that their knee is protruding the body, and I can actually see a gap between the stance leg and now the actual shank leg, right? If they can't get into that position, they're not ready. They haven't got enough internal rotation. So what I'm looking at almost is, if you imagine someone, you know, they're just leaning over slightly 10 degrees or whatever degrees to the left in this case, the stance leg is completely straight through the body. The right leg is crossed over the body so much so that it's rotated enough that there's a gap now from that stance leg and the now free swinging leg. If they can't get into that position that almost looks like a sprint, yeah, then they haven't got enough internal rotation. And at that point, you need to go, actually, yeah. If they're not able to go through, call it a day. It's a very simple visual test. I now know that they haven't got the range of motion yet to be able to work that type of acceleration. So I need to go back and work on that, because they do need to have it, because they are going to need it at some point in gameplay, but not ready yet. So don't try and over drill it, because all you're going to do is cause damage.
And what's interesting there, Stu, is in clinic, I'll get a lot of people who complain of these issues, or I'll get a coach saying, oh, their leg keeps turning out and they're running with their legs turned out, trying to accelerate, just as a sprinter, or it could be a footballer or rugby player, whatever it is. And I get them to do a forward lunge, and I'm not looking at their front leg. I'm actually looking at the hip of their back leg.
Yeah.
And what you see is the knee lift up and it externally rotates as they come through, because there isn't enough internal rotation to keep the pelvis facing forward. So they externally rotate.
Well, that's right, isn't it? Because actually, to be fair, we're probably going to go a bit of a tangent now, but it doesn't matter. When we're talking about through the running gait, there is an external rotation, internal rotation, external rotation. Mm-hmm. And it's if they have optimal internal rotation as they come almost as the mid-stance position, and it'll extend slightly through to almost let them become a bigger stride pattern. If they haven't got enough internal rotation, in fact, they'll end up having a shorter stride because they go into external rotation a little bit too early and have to cut their stride short. And that's when you get the whole heel whip that starts whipping around slightly and the knee starts to go out and rotate.
And unfortunately, to bring his name back up, but Christian Coleman,
it has that massively. Do you know? Oh, my word. I didn't even plan that. But it's one of those things, isn't it? It's that, I mean, it works for him. Let's, you know, ignore what we're talking about previously. But the guy is obviously one of the fastest in the world. And you wouldn't want to change it because he's managed to get the right muscular firing patterns that work for him. Will he stay injury-free, however?
Yeah. Don't know. And we know, like, what Bolt was taking between 41 and 43 steps on average when he was going 9.8. Yeah, between 9.8 and 9.5, he was doing it 41 to 43 strides. Christian Coleman's doing 47.
Yeah.
That just tells you, not because of his height, because Johan Blake got it down to 43. Tyson Gay got it down to 43. Maurice Green got it down to 43. But he's doing it because he's taking more steps, because he can't internally rotate as well as these people.
Yeah.
When he's upright running.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
And yeah, if you were to ask that guy to do a proper carriocha, you wouldn't see that gap. You wouldn't see enough rotation of either way, and you won't get that gap to the side. But obviously he doesn't want to do that because he's a track star. So that's that acceleration maneuver, right? So you have to make sure, assess your athletes, definitely coach them in it, because they are going to need it in a gameplay. It's just, you have to. Same like it, with tennis for some degree, you know, with tennis you have to do a step over in order to get into a backhand position. You have to coach, again, know the sport. Will they or won't they need that position? But no matter what, think about their health in general, work on it. But the other one I actually prefer is the false step. Now, as we said before, about the false step going forward is actually quicker than a normal try and step over from the front foot. But I actually like it for team sports of acceleration, especially for change of direction, for instance. And I say it probably sounds a bit weird for change of direction, but what I try and get my guys to do is, if you imagine I want to drop my center of mass, right? Very, very quickly. It's about 6 inches or whatever. I need to drop it. I'm going to shoot. Again, we're going to go to the left. I'm going to shoot my body down. I'm going to shoot my right leg out to the right. Okay. And what that's going to do is then sort of almost into a quarter flex position and start that propulsion of my hips and my center of mass now shooting to the left. Okay. Now, I talked about knowing the rules to break the rules again. So we're talking about almost like a silhouette sprint position. My left leg, in this case, is now rotating out. All right. So now what I'm doing is I want to face the direction of my acceleration as quick as possible. Whereas the crossover step is I want to face forward, but I want to accelerate to the left or to the right. Now I know where I'm going. I need to get facing that direction as quick as possible. So this is the scenario. Drop my center of mass, right leg shoots out, start causing my center of mass to start already projecting to the left. My left hip comes into a flex position, so my knee's coming up slightly. As it rotates out to the left, now I'm talking about external rotation. And now I'm almost, if you think about a silhouette, I'm almost in that sprint position. My left leg is now going to come back on itself slightly and hit directly under my center of mass, just as it would do in the normal track acceleration, whilst my right leg is now leaving the ground and swinging round through rotation. Again, now the stance leg becomes through an internal rotation. And now I'm facing the direction I want to go and I can accelerate normally. So within one, two steps, I've now fully changed through, you know, transverse rotation. I'm now facing the way I want to go, and I'm going to shoot off as if I would do for normal acceleration. And this is why a lot of team sports need to work on their normal acceleration, because after steps two, three, and, you know, after steps two, you're now in what would call a classic acceleration maneuver.
Yeah. And for me, Stu, I like this for team sports, especially because most team sports involve evasion. Yeah. So they're trying to get away from a player, or you're trying to catch a player. And that fall, when you're landing on that false step and your center of mass is going that direction, the defending player is following you in that direction and they think you're going that way. And then you're diverting your forces back the opposite way. They will carry on taking a step to the right or to their left as you're taking it.
You know, well, that's it. If you imagine, it is quicker. If you were talking about like an agility drill, for instance, right? So I'm running directly at the player, right? I'm not giving away where I'm going. I'm not doing a curve linear run. I'm just going straight forward, right? At some point, I'm going to want to change direction. Now, to do that, I need to drop my center of mass real quick, outshoot a foot, and change direction, shoot the opposite direction. And then, obviously, to do that, I'm going to plant that foot, externally rotate my hip. And then in one, I'm going to do a switch. I'm going to plant this my left leg whilst lifting my right leg. Left leg's gonna come down, right leg swings round almost through, you know, through the hip, not swing round like a boxing, like a punch. But now I'm already going that direction. The first thing the defender knows about that maneuver is when I've already changed direction, right? Because all they saw was me change center of mass. You know, I'm coming towards them, I drop and I shoot real quick. Yeah. It's too late for them to action. And same with agility. You know, I teach my guys mostly to try and work out their acceleration position from an so that when they hit the agility cone, when we're doing all these nice academy tests, it does the inverted commas, that they can plant their external foot and already project their weight, the center of mass in the direction they want to go, rotate the leg out, switch around, so they get moving and they actually save an extra 10 for two. Instead of doing what they've been traditionally doing or automatically want to do, which is go around the cone using their inside step and then stepping over and losing that 10th of a second. Right, even thinking about it, you can make your athletes half a second quicker on an agility test.
Yeah, and you know that weird, the inside step that we're talking at, where they're trying to get their leg round. A lot of them, as they're coming into the cone or they're changing direction or whatever, they start pitter patting. They start taking lots of steps before they get there to slow themselves down to be able to throw the leg round.
Yeah, I mean there's truth. There's an element of deceleration capacity that you need to be aware of, but. You know, but there's too much deceleration when you want to do the inside leg and then spin round, because in most of the time, you know, you're not going to have, because A, your center of mass is too far over. Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're on your inside leg, there's no chance in heck you're going to be lent this direction in order to counteract that force of direction you're traveling in. And you know, or generically, your body knows you're not going to be able to rotate quick enough. So you end up getting slow enough so you can almost reposition yourself in order to bring your leg round, which normally you don't have the capacity to do. Whereas if you just plant the outside leg and shoot the hip, you rotate the hip back in the direction you want to go, within one step, two step, you're back going in the direction you're accelerating again.
Exactly. Yeah. No, you know, I completely agree.
Yeah, and that's the thing with it. So you have to have, and again, the thing to look for there is, do they have the capacity for external rotation? In theory, or in general, most people have external rotation. There's not necessarily normally an issue with that. So, you know, generically, everyone can point one leg in the opposite direction to the other leg and plant that. So it's crucial to be able to do that.
Yeah, no, I agree.
You know, and that's where the non-sagittal acceleration comes into, really. So you have the elements of, do I need to do a step over acceleration? to get moving? Yeah, am I going to track the direction of the game somewhere else, but I want to get moving to my left or to my right? Or do I want to change, or do I know where I'm going? I just need to get my body facing the right direction as quick as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. But regardless, we need to be, from a health perspective, that internal, external rotation of the hips need to be there fundamentally. And you need to almost teach the pattern for, well, not almost, you do need to teach the pattern for both of step over acceleration and the full step acceleration sideways.
Exactly. And this is a big thing, Stu, from a therapy point of view. If anyone comes in complaining of a hip problem, the first thing the hip loses is internal, external rotation, one or the other. Right. Same for the shoulder joint, internal, external rotation. One of them will be reduced when people complain of a shoulder problem or a hip problem. If they come in and complain of a spine problem, what they're going to be reduced in is flexion, extension, not rotation.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's their primary thing. So, you know, getting good internal and external rotation, no matter what their morphology of their hip is, it's getting good ranges for them. And
yeah.
You know, they might find external rotation very easy. Okay, well, what can we do to help you with external rotation, or, you know, vice versa? And helping them get there in a way, passively, actively, and strengthening that system. You know, whether that's in the treatment room with me, or taking them into the gym with me, or, for example, you know, on the field with you or in the gym with you, getting them better in those movements.
Absolutely. And we're not talking about you need to have full range of internal and external rotation. Okay. It's optimal. You need to just be aware of what your athlete has and just think, okay, will 1% make a difference? Okay, will it make a difference to their health? And will it make a difference to, most importantly, their acceleration capacity for their sport? Most team sports are literally about the ability to get moving, you know, within 5 meters, 10 meters, but it's not always straightforward. There is going to be sideways, and in some ways it might even be backwards. You know, it might be an element where they're facing the wrong direction completely, and what kind of mechanics do they use to get back in the right direction? Realistically, we'd want to use a plan, an external rotation, rather than a plan, an internal rotation, because it's much more efficient, it allows more power, and it's just quicker. So, but there will be times where you need to be able to do both, and it's you as a coach need to really work on those capacities of your athlete.
Exactly. And, you know, Stu, the other day when we were at training, Morgan and Petra were messing around with internal external rotation. And they were doing that test where they were seeing if they could turn their both feet out. Morgan and you found external rotation extremely
easy. Yeah, yeah.
Petra could barely externally rotate. However, internal rotation he had massive amounts of.
Yep.
You know, that's the morphology of his pelvis and yours and Morgan's pelvis is different. But what's really interesting is we see that in the way you squat, in the way we deadlift, the way we clean, the way we lunge, you know, but we know that.
we know all these
factors. We've already spotted all these factors.
Yeah.
So we knew that was going to be a thing for him. A lot of these coaches aren't picking up on these things.
you need to be look at it and think, okay, that's the way that person moves. That is their normal pattern. I don't need to change it entirely. I just need to kind of maybe just slightly broaden the bandwidth that they have optimal within them, so there's more scope for them to move and not get injured.
Yeah, or it's, you know, it's as simple as this. People who are externally rotated a lot, you know, they struggle to do internal rotation. Okay, maybe they have reduced range, but also if they're constantly externally rotated, they're also going to have reduced strength in internal rotation.
Yeah.
So just strengthening the internal rotators doesn't mean you're going to get more internal rotation. It just means the body will handle it better.
Yeah.
So it won't get stressed out. It won't get overloaded and suddenly start breaking down. And then you have to go back to square one.
No, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's one of those things, isn't it? You've got to keep your athletes healthy. That is the biggest, most important thing.
And it's going back to the other podcast we did about general prep at the very start of the season. We talk about the human strength. You know, are they a good human? Can their body do these things? Have they got all round health strength? Can they internally rotate? Can they externally rotate? You know, extension, flexion, you know, making sure that they can handle these things. So when we get them into their sport, do it, for example, rugby or football or basketball, you know, can they do their lateral steps? Can they do their lateral shuffles without breaking that down? Can they do the false step? Can they do the step over? And all these factors all fit into each other. So you're reducing injury, but also increasing performance.
Yeah, and that's one of the things you just got to look at, isn't it? Yeah, it's human first, simple as that. Keep them healthy and that kind of stuff. Then you want to make them athletic. You know, that's what you're looking at. It's athletic. I'm not talking athletics. Just make them athletic. Make them an athlete. Yeah, what makes them good? Before we start layering on the actual specificity of the sport itself, let's just make them good. Make them good, resilient. Yeah. So we talk about injury resilience a lot of the time. And I'm talking about here about the internal and external rotations can cause injuries. Well, it's because, you know, we need to make them resilient. To be resilient, it's got to be athletic, right? You've got to be bouncy. You've got to have those range of motion. You've got to have the suppleness that's required throughout these ranges of motion before you start layering on whatever it is we need.
Yeah. And, you know, watching the documentary The Last Dance about Michael Jordan, the Chicago Bulls, seeing the body positions he gets his body into and doesn't get injured just shows how resilient his body was. He had great internal rotation, great external rotation. He had such good control of his body in all these different positions. It's amazing. And then you have a flip side, LeBron James. Okay, he's had a few injuries with his ankles, but he spends $1.5 million a year on keeping his body in tip-top shape, LeBron. Jordan wasn't doing
that. It's all right for some, isn't it?
Yeah, because he's got the money to do that, right?
Yeah.
Now, a thing that we see with LeBron do, he rarely internally rotates. He rarely does a step over step because he can't do it.
But, well, that's it. If he can't do it, he's not going to try and do it, right? And that's the problem. That's a good thing. If he knows he can't do it or his body won't allow him to do it, then don't do it. Or if you know that's a proper limiting factor. So it's, again, knowing what you need to do.
And if you go onto LeBron's Instagram, he's been doing some videos of his workouts and stuff. And there's a video of him squatting. Okay, his knees are buckling in and everyone says, oh, you've got to push your knees out to squat. Good. Yeah, if you don't want to get injured, I totally understand it. You want that body resilience. However, if he can't internally rotate, so he's turned his legs out, and the way his body produces power is by pulling them out, yeah? So they're dropping in as he goes down. So when he starts coming up, he can pull them out. If he leaves them out, he won't be able to get up because he won't be able to use his glutes because he doesn't have that ability.
Yeah, but, and that's it. That's what we say before, isn't it? About, you just need to know your athlete's kind of morphology, what they are, what the limitations are, and then work within that bandwidth or try and just slightly broaden that bandwidth. You can't have someone who's completed this and try and make them, you know, a unicorn when all they are is a badger. I've no idea why I use that analogy, but you know, you can't make a unicorn out of a badger. It's true.
The most British thing I've ever heard. If an American hears this, they'll be going, what the hell is a badger?
That's a bait of the countryside, people. But yeah, that's brilliant. Right. Okay. We're going to leave that one there on a little bit about lateral acceleration, so non-sagittal acceleration. And obviously a little bit of chat there about last week's podcast as well. So I appreciate that. And we'll be back next week for hopefully another guest edition. But we shall reconvene.
Yes, definitely. And guys, hopefully what me and Stu will try and do is do a couple of videos on these different steps and what we do to help with it. And we're going to put it up on our Instagram account, which is what is it again, Stu? Godiva Marshall Sprints?
I'm not sure we will put it on the Instagram. No.
No, we're not going to put it on the Instagram.
We'll put it on the Sports Performance Training website.
There we go. Thank you very much.
Where the host the home of all the podcast stuff and all the other videos, because it just helps then all in one place. If you want to jump between each podcast and have a look at the whatever we're talking about, whether it's the books that we recommend in our book club or stuff about shin splints and things like that, it's all in one place and you can just find it very, very easy. Very, very easy. But no, that's good. So once again, Aidan, thank you for your time.
Brilliant. Thank you, Stu.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sports Performance Training Podcast. If you like it, please give us a subscribe and share amongst your friends or anything like that. And of course, give us a positive review. We really appreciate that. And we will see you next time for another edition of the Sports Performance Training Podcast.